Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up on the program tomorrow, New York Philharmonic conductor Lauren Mazel joins us in our studio just back from North Korea. And right now, we conclude our Black History Month series in conjunction with the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture. About a quarter of the population of New York City is African American. That's twice the national average. During the period known as the Great Migrations, American blacks left the South in droves, resettling in northern and western cities across the United States. And, of course, people migrated for a host of reasons: to leave oppressive Jim Crow laws, seek new economic opportunity, and in some cases just sever connections with memories of slavery in the South. Now, however, more northern African Americans are moving south than the other way around. We want to hear your family migration stories, south to north, north to south, if you're African American, at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And with us now is Dr. Sylvie Ann Diouf, a curator at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, part of the New York Public Library System in Harlem. She's the author of Dreams of Africa in Alabama, The Slave Ship Clotilda, and The Story of the Last Africans Brought to America, published by the Oxford University Press last year. She is also content manager for the website In Motion about the African-American migration experience. Welcome to the show, Dr. Diouf.
Thank you very much.
And your book, Dreams of Africa, is very relevant this year because it is the 200th anniversary of the end of the transatlantic slave trade. And you describe a tightly knit community who had the unusual experience of arriving as slaves 5 years prior to emancipation. They helped to found Africatown in Mobile, Alabama. How did that distinct identity reflect itself in the lives of their descendants?
Well, first of all, you know, I just want to mention that, yes, you know, the slave trade was supposed to end in 1808, but those people arrived in 1860. So that's 52 years after the official abolition of the slave trade.
So what happens on paper and happens in the real world don't necessarily connect.
Exactly, exactly. The slave trade actually continued illegally in secret. So they arrived in 1860, and of course, you know, they were free again in 1865. And a few years later, they founded Africatown. That's what they called it, in Mobile. And they lived there really as Africans in America. Now, the second generation also was kind of in between. You know, they went to school. I mean, their African parents actually built a school for them. So they went to school. They spoke English. They also spoke the African languages of their parents. And they were kind of in between, if you will. I think it's really at this level of the third generation that people really became what we can call today African Americans. Mm-hmm. And they were still distinct, though, and they were called those Africans, you know, by the others. But really, at the third generation, again, even though they had retained a lot of African
identity,
cultural trait, uh-huh, they were African-Americans.
Now, you're the content manager, as I said, for a large educational website called In Motion, covering African-American migration. When and why, since things were so oppressive for so long in the South, did the real migration to the North begin?
Well, the real migration, you know, really started, I mean, in the, you know, in the 19th century, there was a small migration, but the big migration really started during World War One, and because of the stop to European immigration at that time and the need for workers in the war industries in the North. So that's really when people started to move out of the South. And between 1916 and 1930, about 1.5 million African-Americans moved from the South to the North.
And when black families arrived in the North in the first part of the 20th century, what types of job options did they find? I guess, as you say, this coincided with the industrialization of the northern cities.
Yes. Men mostly found work on the railroads. They also found work in factories. Women, Southern African-American women who migrated at that time, still performed domestic service in the North. They did not really enter the industry at that time, mm-hmm. but the men did.
Who did they compete with in the job market, and were there major differences between what jobs blacks were permitted to take versus the options that the recent European immigrant influx were getting?
Well, actually, you know, I don't think they were much in competition with anybody at that time during World War I and during World War II as well, because jobs in the North and in the West were still segregated. So there were really jobs for whites and there were jobs for blacks, and it's really only at the beginning of the 1940s that there was a federal ban on discrimination in the defense industries, but this ban was very weakly enforced, so the competition was not really there.
Let's take a few callers' stories of their families' migration histories, and then I want to wrap up by asking you briefly about reverse migration now. I know there have been some statistics that, at least in New York City, the African-American population is actually declining in recent years, and at least some of those people are actually headed south. But our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, for your family's migration stories, African-Americans, 212-433-9692. And Bennis in Philadelphia, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad.
So what's your story, real briefly?
Okay, real briefly. Well, on my side, the Hill family, we were born into slavery back in the 1860s. An Irish-American slaveholder named Garrett down in Tappahannock region. His grandson, African-American, moved up to Atlantic City. I think there was like 8 kids or 9 kids.
And then my father to do what kind of work, do you know?
25.
To do what kind of work?
Grandmother's side, they were born on the Duke Plantation. Duke Plantation, and my grandmother came up here, I guess, in 1920.
What was the first kind of
Duke.
Can you hear me, Venice? What was what was the first kind of work? That was
let me see. I think my grandmother's father with the Dukes, I think that he's basically like a groundskeeper. My father's father, what did he do? I think he might have been a truck driver. That was my mother's father. He was a truck driver. She was born in East Orange. That was my grandmother. Uh-huh.
And when you look at this, it looks like you've really looked into your family migration history. What does it mean to you?
Well, for me, I guess it was a little bit different because after my different experiences throughout the country, I think that for people then it was a move for jobs and for opportunity because their industry was up here and it wasn't so much down there. Mm-hmm. Also because the type of racism down there was different than it was up here, even though it was here everywhere because of Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. I guess it wasn't so in your face or beating you about the head mm-hmm. and neck.
Right. Dennis, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And Len in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Len.
Good morning.
Who from your family came north?
My parents.
Uh-huh.
They left rural Georgia in the early 1960s and moved out west to the Seattle, Washington.
And how'd you wind up in New York?
I came out here for a Ivy walled education.
Right. And so did they talk much about moving from the South to Washington State?
Interesting. They didn't. They didn't early on. I remember very vividly coming home one day from the from elementary school, maybe like fifth grade, with a book about Jim Crow, and this in Seattle. And my parents had never talked about it. Never. And then they opened up, you know, talking about the segregated buses and their own work experience. You know, back of the back of the shop type of thing.
Yep. Did they feel like they got what they were looking for?
They did. They did. My father swore he would never go back. Never go back south.
Len, thank you very much. And Roy on Roosevelt Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Roy.
Hi. My family migrated here from Jamaica, British West Indies. And it was a very interesting way that they approached. They were very realistic. They knew that in order to be, they felt they could be successful in America, but in order to be, they had to recognize the fact that there was a prejudicial attitude here. So that my father got skills as an automobile mechanic and ended up being a foreman in an automobile in a taxi company. And my mother had a had an opportunity to go to England to college. She's very bright, but she instead chose to study domestic science because she said, my employment here will be in homemaking. And that also proved to be a very wise decision, since when she came here with her skills, she got employment with a couple in the garment industry. She was like their surrogate mother. She was, in fact, like a governess. She did all the cooking and took care of the kids and so on. And they did that in order that their children could get the education and the tools to
And you're grateful. And you're grateful.
Oh, boy, am I grateful. In fact, she used prejudice, which is something that maybe...
What do you mean?
Well, she said they're prejudiced here. So in order to get credit for 100% of an effort, you have to do 200%. Well, you can do it. So I expect it of you.
Wow.
And really, that having that as your mantra meant that, you know, you just knew that you could accomplish more and you should accomplish more.
Roy, thank you very much. And Sylvie Diouf, are these the kind of stories that you've heard a lot?
Yes, and it's interesting because, you know, some of them are typical and others are not. For example, the caller whose family is from Georgia and they moved to Seattle, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And that's very unusual because people from Georgia and the Carolinas and Virginia moved east. They moved to New York and Philadelphia, Boston. Those people who moved to the west were usually people from Texas, Alabama. So that's kind of an unusual migration route.
We just have a minute left. Is the migration starting to go the other way now?
Definitely, since the 70s, and it has really increased. There are twice as many African Americans who move south than move north. So this is the huge, and it's a huge trend. New York City is losing a lot of African Americans, and people are moving to Florida, the Carolinas, and Georgia.
Is it for work in 30? Is it for work or is it also for lifestyle?
It's for both. It depends on the people. Young people usually move for economic reasons, you know, to find a better job. Older people move for you know, better quality of life, slower pace. Single mothers move because they're afraid of, you know, the violence.
Yes.
So we have
to leave it there with Dr. Sylvie Ann Diouf, author of Dreams of Africa in Alabama and content manager for the website In Motion and from the Schomburg Center. And I want to thank you and Dr. Dodson, who was with us the other weeks, for a great Black History Month series these four Thursdays in February. Thank you very, very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.